WBDGFM HD1, Indianapolis.
You're listening to Ben Davis Giants Football on WBDG, Indianapolis.
Hey, let's go!
Going to be fourth down, last play of the game, barring a penalty.
It all comes down to
your head. Open your action.
Victory will not be handed to you.
Tom Allen jumping up and down, getting everybody into it. One play.
Number one, Ben Davis Football is physical. Number one, Ben Davis Football is hit.
Who's going to go home?
All you seniors. Will you let this be taken away from you?
Don't
no, sorry. No way.
You must go seize the
it's
moment.
It's going to come down to the signal. Touchdown, Ben Davis. Touchdown, Ben Davis. The Giants win.
I am honored every day to put on something that says Ben Davis Football. I am honored.
When you hit the door, you're a Ben Davis Giant.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Inside Ben Davis Football, presented by Chuck Bear Carpenter Realtors. I'm Owen Poley alongside WBDG General Manager John Easter and Head Coach of your Giants, Jason Simmons. Glad to have you guys for another week of this show. The Giants get a big homecoming win, 34-28 over the Lawrence North Wildcats. Coach, run us through Friday night.
Yeah, you know, we tried to keep our fans here as long as we could on Friday. So, especially with the rain, we didn't want the rain and the score to get them out of here. So, no, I thought we were pretty sluggish really throughout the first half. You know, we were able, fortunate to score on our opening drive, when Marcus, Thomas Gajkowski put a ball, in a tight window to Marcus. Marcus made a contested catch, broke two tackles, and was able to skate free. Then we turn around and give up two consecutive long runs, and they were able to answer our scoring drive with one of their own. And, that part was pretty frustrating because I thought we came out pretty sluggish, honestly. Went into halftime, it was a one-score game at half, and made some adjustments, had good conversation at halftime, and really in all three phases, got some things cleaned up from the first half that felt like needed to get cleaned up, and then came out in the second half, started the third quarter fairly well. When you look at how our defense responded in the first half, only giving up the one score after the opening drive, you certainly gave us some momentum to build on. You take away four plays in the first half, and I think they averaged less than 3 yards per play. They only threw the ball three times in the first half. So, we knew some things were going to be different in the second half coming out. We were able to come out, get a stop and a score, and then we caused a turnover on the ensuing kickoff, and we were able to go up two scores. At that point, went up three scores, and I felt like our football team kind of lost their focus a little bit at that point. And that's the part that we got to get cleaned up. We were up 28-7. Gave up consecutive scores, and really just kind of found a way to hang on. When you look at it, there were a lot of good things sprinkled throughout the night. There were a lot of things that had to get cleaned up. I think probably the one thing we can take away from it being being kind of a little bit of a hybrid football team right now with some key senior leadership in key spots, but also some young guys in some other spots is, we found a way to win. We've been in two other close games this year, one possession games, and came up on the short end of the stick in those two. So really to get a Mick win, stay undefeated in the conference and find a way to pull that thing out was probably the one thing that you could take away and say, okay, we've learned a little bit here. We've grown a little bit. But we certainly left a lot on the table to get better at this week in preparation for Carmel.
Coach Marcus Reese again, stellar play. You mentioned his touchdown there. He had another one, two touchdowns in the game, along with seven catches, 132 yards to go with what he did at Warren Central, where I think he had 12 catches in that Warren game. So almost 20 catches in two games. What's your feeling on his play the last couple of weeks and all season, because we know he's a guy that's really worked hard over the summer?
Yeah, he put a lot of work in over the summer to get better. And I think when you look at him from week one to right now, he had to get better in contested catch situations. He made a couple of tough catches on Friday. He also put a couple on the deck, and he would be the first one to tell you he's got to find a way to use his body and to be able to separate enough. He's got to clean some route thing, some route running stuff up to be able to create more space for himself. We talked about that Saturday morning. And the other area he had to grow was tracking the deep ball and catching the deep ball. And you know, maybe his most impressive catch on Friday was the sideline catch late in the fourth quarter, where that he caught over his shoulder and got 1 foot in bounds. That was probably the most impressive catch he had all night. And I thought his first touchdown catch was a high level catch. So, you know, he knows, you know, we challenge our guys every week. I've said it on here before, you know, to have a goal every week. And, you know, he came out of week one and he dropped a couple of deep balls over his shoulder, didn't track them well. He was the first one to, you know, to be hard on himself. But, you know, we can't let our guys be down and be hard on themselves. We got to coach them through that. And so we did that. You know, for the first 5 minutes during kick specials period at the beginning of practice, he did nothing but catch balls over his shoulder. And so, yeah, I think we're starting to see some of that work pay off a little bit. He had the huge catch over his shoulder Friday. And so, you know, he challenges himself. He doesn't like coming out in practice. He likes taking every rep. He challenges himself day in and day out to continue to grow and get better. And, yeah, I think we're fortunate to see that week in and week out. You know, he has a good connection with Thomas. Those two guys being able to speak an unspoken language certainly has an impact on our passing game.
Yeah, looking at Thomas and Marcus, it almost reminds me if you watched the old Colts with Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison, that kind of quarterback wide receiver connection that's always key in an offense like that. But going over to Thomas Gadkowski, in the first half it was – now, Gadkowski has a quick zip on his ball. He's quick to release the ball. It seemed like in the first half he was overthrowing guys and almost of an overthrow problem, but in the second half, it seemed like he came out and really fixed it. Talk about that.
Well, you look in the first half, I think he was 10 for 18 at halftime, and you know, a lot of those were just straight velocity type balls. You know, he's got to learn to throw more than just a fastball. That's been a point of emphasis for us with him, you know, for the last couple of weeks. You know, he had Marcus on a short dig route that he probably put too much on. He had a couple of other short area throws that you know, he's just got to get the ball, and he's got to get the ball in our hands and in a position to be able to go do something with it. And so, you know, that's an area that we've challenged him with. Felt like he made the necessary adjustments and really just kind of settled down. He was amped up Friday. He's a guy that plays with a lot of energy. And when he plays with a lot of energy, that you see his quick release, but also the velocity he puts on the ball, those two things get ramped up with his energy level on Fridays, and that thing's got a lot of heat on it. So, you know, there it's twofold. That velocity allows him to put the ball in tight windows, which he did on more than one occasion to Zane Skibinski, Destin Beecham. And that, you know, the flip side of that is when we got guys open, you know, we got to be able just to convert those and put it on them. And so it's knowing when to uncork that Nolan Ryan fastball and when to take a little bit off and just get it to our guy in space so he can go do something with it, because ultimately he's going to get passing yards for both types of balls.
Yeah, I know in the fourth quarter, and you might have had the same reaction, if you go back and you listen to the broadcast, you can hear me go, because he throws one in between, I think, three defenders to beat him, I think, made the
thread
catch.
The needle.
You can hear me go.
Yeah, when you go back and look at that ball, it's not only the ball that he put in there, but it's also a concentration by a guy who hasn't taken a ton of wide receiver reps in Destin Beecham. Yeah. You know, we started him in the slot on Friday because he did some really good things in practice for us and really, really proved, you know, that he's one of those guys that we got to try and find a way to keep on the field. And so when you look at Destin's contributions on Friday, contributions on the punt team, contributions out of the backfield, contributions out of the slot, and, you know, he had two big kickoff returns out past the 35-yard line. So you talk about a senior that, you know, has really stepped up and owned his role. He's a guy that's done that for us on the offensive side of the ball. So it was good for him to see him, you know, have a lot of different layers of success on Friday.
Yeah, I was going to ask about Destin Beecham, 133 all-purpose yards, those are huge. But the big catches and the wheels that he has to get away from people, that's what we continued to talk about during the broadcast on Friday. The question, I had a question, though, about the field goal unit. Obviously, you had some issues there on Friday night. Had a couple of blocked field goals, which is something that's very unusual for the Giants. So what was going on with the operation on Friday night?
Yeah, we had three total block kicks. When you look at all three of them, it was the same issue. You know, we were chasing the outside edge rush guy and leaving an inside lane. And it's simple math. You know, the quickest way between 2 points is a straight line. And we did a poor job coaching it. That starts with me. We did a poor job in game getting that thing adjusted, getting it coached up and adjusted on the fly, and obviously we did a poor job executing as well. But you know, the execution piece falls on us as coaches, and that starts with me. We did not do a good enough job, you know, seeing it in game. You know, we caught the first kick, felt like we had it cleaned up. Was better on the second kick, and then you know, just kind of unraveled from there, and you know, really put us in a position. You know, we had an opportunity to make it a two possession game with 2 minutes or a little over 2 minutes left to go, and you know, we completely laid an egg, and so that, you know, we're making strides to get that fixed this week, but you know, it starts with me, you know, in terms of making sure those guys are coached up and aligned and doing things the right way, and we didn't get that done Friday, either in preparation for them or in game, you know, getting it fixed in game.
Yeah, I even said on the last kickoff that was, or excuse me, field goal that was blocked, I even said that if they make this, it'll seal the game, and then it got blocked, and then, I mean, the Giants ended up winning, but I know as a coaching standpoint, a lot less comfortable than what it could have been if that field goal would have gone through the uprights. But moving over to Lawrence North's offensive side, in the first half, seemed like a lot of big up-the-gut plays on the runs and getting big yardage, but the second half, kind of played a little bit more passing towards the sidelines. What was your defensive look at it on the second half?
You know, when you look at what they tried to do in the first half, really felt like they tried to shorten the game and get the game to the second half. And, you know, they used up a lot of the play clock. They ran the ball quite a bit. I think they only threw it three times in the first half. Used Ollie Richardson quite a bit in the inside zone run game. They used their quarterback some in the run game as well. And so I felt, you know, we got the feeling that they were trying to shorten the game a little bit. We let them go on two different eight play or longer drives that really used up a lot of clock. And when you do that, you know, you got to stay poised, you know, from an offensive standpoint. You got to find a way to keep your rhythm, which we didn't do a great job of. But two, you know, you got to win and find ways to get off the field on third down. When you look at some of those drives, it was inside zone. We'd have them in third and long, and you know, we'd let the quarterback scramble, or we'd give up a run on first down that, you know, would get six or seven. So we never finished opportunities to get off the field in the first half. In the second half, you know, they tried to run the football early. We get a stop and a score, then we caused the fumble on the kickoff, and really the score kind of drove them to open it up a little bit, and then they found some opportunities to take some shots. You know, one of those was a screen and go. We didn't have real good discipline during the week on the same exact route, and then they run it on Friday, and it's like, well, you know, we hate to say it, but you know, that we had a hunch that may happen, you know, and so that's on us. Like we got to be more disciplined in our assignment execution. Second one was on us as a coaching staff. Second long touchdown pass for them. You know, we tried to communicate coverage too late, and you know, our players were in a comfort zone with the coverage on the field, and we tried to change it up too late, and you just can't do that. And so, you know, that's on us as a coaching staff. We put our kids in a bad spot. Can't do that in any game, but especially when you have a two score lead.
And with that, we're going to wrap up the first half of Inside Ben Davis Football, presented by Chuck Bear Carpenter Realtors. We're going to go to a quick break and then come back with the second half, previewing this. Excuse me, Friday's game against Carmel. Almost said Saturday, but this Friday's game against Carmel, it's their homecoming game. Ben Davis just won theirs, but we're going to go to a quick break. Come back with the second half.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour,
if you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind,
walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out, and for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
I'm Chris Jakimick. I served in the United States Air Force, and I deployed 3 times. So in 2017, I was serving as an Air Force First Sergeant. Our motto in that role is, my job is people, everyone is my business. But unfortunately, in that year, I would lose my own brother, Lance Corporal Adam Jakimick, to suicide. The majority of veteran suicides are from guns. I store my weapons securely, not only for myself, but for my family. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide. My service never stops.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Now back to Inside Ben Davis Football, presented by Bear Realtor.
Hello and welcome back to Inside Ben Davis Football, presented by Chuck Bear Carpenter Realtors. I'm here with WBDG General Manager John Easter and Head Coach Jason Simmons. And we're here for the second half to preview the game against Carmel. Now, Carmel, pretty good team this year. You know, they're 4-2 on the year.
You could say that. Yeah, they're pretty good.
They're a pretty good team.
Two losses to national-type teams.
Yeah. And
one named Center Grove.
One named Center Grove. And one
named
year,
Louisville Trinity, right?
That beat Center Grove as well. But, Coach, I know you're gonna say that you're upset that they're not in the mix, that this is not a conference game. Your weekly complaint about that, but yeah,
the first time since 1995 that this won't be a conference game.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen who are listening, the MIC was created in 1996. So the last time they played that was non-conference was because the MIC did not exist. Now, Coach, you got 2-4-2 teams. What are your preparations for this Greyhounds team?
Preparations don't change, like just in terms of how we go about our business from a weekend standpoint. Started for us, really our staff started to get into them Friday night after our LN game. You know, some of the communication started flying specific to Carmel. You know, and then Saturday and Sunday, you turn the tape on and roll the tape, and you look at them offensively. They're explosive. They have answered the bell anytime they've been challenged to score points. They've been able to, you know, they got into a little bit of a shootout with Center Grove, had a chance on the last possession of the game to win it, came up just short. Had a ball thrown into the end zone on their last offensive snap that could have given them a chance. So, you know, they have weapons that force you to defend the entire width of the field. And they systematically want to run the football to give themselves an advantage and to keep you honest, I think. And, you know, the right side of their offensive line is a really impressive pair to watch. There's some similarities, I think, between the two offenses, just in terms of philosophically. Both teams are going to try and stress defenses and make both defenses defend 53 and a third by whatever's left. You know, we're going to make you defend sideline to sideline and then, you know, try and take some calculated shots to get over the top. So you look at them and they're opportunistic offensively. They're young in spots. They're a veteran in spots. They got playmakers on the perimeter. They have, you know, two of the top six, I think, yardage receivers in the mix right now, and so that, you know, they have some explosive players on the perimeter that can stress us in the secondary. And you look at them defensively, and it's easy to turn the tape on and find the two guys that are committed to Purdue right now, and they look the part. You know, they're long, they're physical guys, but you know they're so systematic and sound with how they move, their initial movement across the board. You know, they have a great deal of discipline in their assignments defensively. And so, you know, we have to match that. And, you know, that's been an area that's been inconsistent for us. You know, you go back to Friday, our offensive line had four holding calls, two of them in critical situations where we're in, you know, kind of in that fringe scoring zone area. And so, you know, we can't continue to shoot ourselves in the foot and expect to finish drives when we get behind the chains. But, you know, we got to continue to grow our offensive line and challenge our offensive line, because I think it's going to be a key component to Friday. When you go back and look at who we started on Friday, we had four of the five starters were starting their seventh or fewer games. And when you have an inexperienced group like that, game, you know, in terms of game starts and game experience, they're going to make some mistakes. And so we got to continue to coach at extremely high level and coach them extremely hard to get them through that and give their toolbox enough tools to be able to weather some of those things. And so, you know, I think that group's going to be critical for us. You know, when you got to be able to take advantage of what they give you defensively. So you got to have the opportunity to check at the line of scrimmage if it's there. They're going to show some different pressures. They have some intentional pressure looks. And so we got to make sure we recognize those and we get those things blocked up. And then, you know, you look at them on special teams and they're extremely sound. I think they have three special team scores so far this year. Berglund has two punt returns for touchdowns. Peterson has a return for a touchdown. And so got some explosive returners that we got to make sure we identify and we do everything we can to keep the ball away from them.
I know, Coach, that person that we saw way too much on Friday was the trainer and the training staff. So I know heading into this game, I know you won't tell us exactly where you stand injury-wise, but we know that there were some injuries on Friday night. So where do the Giants stand here on Tuesday of this week?
Yeah, we lost two guys on the defensive side of the ball. don't think we're going to get either one of those guys back. I don't know that we'll get either one of those guys back for the regular season, to be honest. And so we've had to make sure we get that accounted for. We had depth in one spot. We had really depth in both spots. But we got to make sure that we get the next guy coached up as well. And so we'll weather those two okay. You know, we'd like to have both players, but it doesn't look like we're going to have either one of them possibly here for several weeks. And then, you know, you look at some of the other just dings that we picked up on Friday. Those are getting better every day. Yeah, I don't see those being an issue by the time we get to this Friday. So, yeah, I think some of it is, you know, when you look at our schedule and week in and week out, you're playing a team that realistically could be in the top 10 or 12 in 6A every week. That happens. You know, you got to have depth in this league. You got to continue to work hard in the weight room and keep your body armor at a place where your body can take that, you know, just the level of physicality that our league presents. And then you got to handle your business. You know, that's been a huge point of emphasis with our guys this week. Not just academically, but you got to get sleep. You got to eat right. You got to get rest. You can't be up. You know, can't be on your phone. You can't be social. You know, can't be playing on your socials. Like, at some point, you just got to take care of your business and make sure your body gets rested up. And so, you know, we got to continue to work at it. We got to continue to work at that and preach that with our guys. But yeah, I think there's two that we won't see this week, but the rest of them. We'll be in an opportunity to have available for us on Friday.
Now, Coach, Carmel has an amazing linebacker in William Helton, a senior. He's averaging 9.7 tackles per game, 5 sacks on the season. He's got 2 caused fumbles, and he's got 5 hurries on the quarterback. Similar play to the Lawrence North team with the linebackers with the blitz there. You're going 2 weeks in a row with linebackers with amazing defensive stats. How are you working with that?
Well, you better ID Will Helt. If you haven't seen him in person, he's impressive. You know, he's 6'5", and we saw him in the Jamboree, and we're looking for number 45 because that was the number he wore a year ago. This year he's wearing 15, and, you know, he's 6'5". I mean, there's a reason he's a Purdue commit, right? Purdue's recruiting him off of not just his athletic ability at his size, but they're also recruiting him off of his traits. You know, he's 6'5". He's probably got a wingspan that's pushing 7 feet. He's long. He's active. He's got really good instincts. He can cover a lot of space. They like playing him in the boundary, which, you know, can kind of mess with you a little bit if you like sticking the ball into the boundary, which we've had success with this year. So you have to ID him. And you can't just ID him and say, well, he's there, because he can cover so much ground. You know, he's so long and he's so athletic. You have to scheme for him. You know, and I say that, it's easy to say, well, you got to scheme for him, but you have to ID where he can run fit. You have to ID where he fits in terms of pass protection, and where he could be. And so you got to find him. You know, our offensive line's alert to it. You got to find him early. And you got to ID where his run fit is and where his pass rush fit is. Is he a coverage player or is he a rush player? Because they'll have him do both in their defensive scheme. So we got to have intentional eyes on him. But he's a good looking player, and there's a reason he's a Power 5 guy.
Obviously, Coach, last year didn't get to end the game like we would have wanted. And certainly this is 1 year now since that situation, which was no fault of either football team. What kind of conversations have you had with Coach Hebert about that incident last year and the teams? How much of that has been put kind of behind you now?
I think all of it's been put behind us. You know, Coach Hebert and I have a relationship that goes back a long time, have a tremendous amount of respect for him, not just as a ball coach, but as a person. You know, and I think that weekend, you know, from Friday night clear through really Monday, Tuesday, and, you know, just kind of the after effects of conversations that people wanted to have about that incident. You know, we had quite a bit of conversation. But, you know, once we got over it, you know, once we got through kind of that first week and tried to get back to some level of normalcy, I don't know that it's been a huge part of our conversations, to be honest. I mean, it was an unfortunate incident, like you said, that had nothing to do with either program on the field. And so you get into a situation like that, and, You know, it's not reflective of either community. It's not reflective of either school. It's not reflective of either program. And so you take a deep breath, and a whole lot of good was taken from that night, you know, because of that incident. And, you know, fortunately, here we are a year later, and I think both communities have been able to move past it. Certainly, looking for a great travel base of Giants heading up north. But, you know, we want our fans to travel there. We want our fans to be loud and be supportive. We're going to go into an environment that's their homecoming, and so I'm sure that place will be rocking. As you and I have both seen it when it's been packed, and there'll be a lot of energy and a lot of excitement, and you know that's what the game is all about. That's what high school football should be about. And you know, we'll be ready. We're going to be able to look. I'm sure conversations and articles may pop up, you know, the remainder of this week, people just kind of digging it back up. But you know, the at the end of the day, we're going there to play ball against a really high level program. And you know, I'm sure you're going to watch two teams have a great deal of sportsmanship, play a physical football game, and at the end of the night, we're going to shake hands, and you know, we're going to head back west, and they're going to head home, and we're both going to get ready for week 8 after that.
Well, now we can put that question to bed forever. You know, as far as this series, you talk about the kind of series that it is between Carmel and Ben Davis. You know, everything happened last year with the Mick, but what I've said is that probably more than any other series, this series, and I guess Warren and North Central, all of those predated the Mick, LC to a certain extent, but really it wasn't a year by year thing. But for North Central, which dates back to the 1950s, of course, you got the Warren series, which goes all the way back to 1937 continuously. And Ben Davis and Carmel played couple games in the 50s, but it dates to 1981, and the Giants have played Carmel every year. So over 48 meetings, it is exactly dead even at 24 apiece, which I think is interesting. No team ever seems to get very far from each other. Carmel hasn't led the series. It's been tied 8 times since 1995. Carmel hasn't led the series since 1995.
So statistically, Ben Davis has the upper hand.
It favors the Giants, but we won't say that. What are some of your memories of this series? I'll ask the Jeff question here.
Yeah,
shoot. That's usually Jeff's question. What are your memories of the series?
There's a lot of them. You know, I don't remember what year it was. May have been 2007 where we hit the double pass.
Yeah,
here at Ben Davis late in the game.
Marquise.
Yeah. Coming back from injury, Marquise. We hit. 2006, I think we were up there, and that game was just a physical game. 2008, we were up there through the wheel route on our sideline late in the game that kind of flipped the field and gave us a little bit of a spark. I think it was DeDonte Asher. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of memories of this rivalry. You know, when you're fortunate to be involved in this program for 10 years, and you go back to the regional in 2020. We went up there and played as bad as a Ben Davis team has played, probably as bad as any Ben Davis team has played in the regular season contest, and you know, to host them then in the regional in 2020 and play a solid ball game, you know, that was a huge memory, because you know, I think it kind of got our kids over the hump during that COVID year and kind of gave our school a little bit of a shot in the arm, you know. So, you know, there's been some big time memories. And, you know, I think when you're fortunate to be a part of this program for 10 years now, you know, you get a lot of great memories, because you're in big time games all the time. And, you know, I don't think this one's going to be any different Friday.
I have two in this game. First was 1991, number one versus number two. Ben Davis was on its way to a national title. Carmel was there. Absolutely killed Carmel here. But you can go back and look at the tape. People were standing around the fence line. That's how many people were at Giants Stadium that night. And then the second one was obviously the state game, where the Giants get down 17-0 and then score the next 34.
Kyle Kastner.
Yeah. And the there's a hair on your, you know, the hair standing on end moment is after the fake field goal that the Giants hit, which Kyle Kastner ran in. You can hear the crowd, the Ben Davis crowd, is yelling BD, BD, BD. It's just, I mean, it's like hair on your moment, hair on your arm stand up moment. For, so just, those are a couple of mine over the years.
I've been in around Ben Davis football enough to have a favorite moment yet, but hopefully tonight Friday night we can get one.
And this one typically favors the underdog, but there's no underdog in this game.
No underdog.
No, this is a pick 'em.
Same record.
Friday night. Yep.
But yeah, check it out here. Pre-game starts at 6:15, kickoff at 7. Ben Davis travels to Carmel High School to take on the Greyhounds. Check it out right here, Indy's Giant 90.9. I will be on that call alongside Garrett Burkle. Like I said, 6:15. Mr. Purdue. Ben Davis versus Carmel. Yeah, he'll probably have some good words to say about them. But check that out right here, Indy's Giant 90.9.
This has been a presentation of the Ben Davis Sports Radio Network.